Today's program has been brought to you by Roberta's Pizza, robertaspizza.com.
Hi, this is Celia Cutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Bob Burt.
Arts and Seizures.
Crazy Daisy, we're back. Episode 151 of Arts and Seizures, and they said it wouldn't last. Holy shit, I feel like the Joe Franklin of the Heritage Radio Network. And sitting in the celebrity co-host chair today is my old friend, beatnik number one, Bob Burt. What's happening, Bob?
Hey, kids.
I'm thinking, Bob, of doing the whole show in my Joe Franklin voice. Today we have a young woman.
Joe Franklin voice, Mike Geddison Sharkey voice. It's
very,
pretty one and the same.
She's a star, a superstar. She is for a long-time listener, first-time guest.
I'm not young, though.
You are to me.
Yeah. A superstar, very, very big in the restaurant business. Please welcome our friend, Erin Norris.
Oh, yay. Thanks.
Well, it's crazy. It's great to have you here, Erin. You are a pillar of patience. For everything that you've gone through to get your restaurant Grindhouse up and running. I'm really thrilled to have you. I love your restaurant.
Thank you.
And you are, out of 151 shows and 43,000 guests, certainly one of the most admirable.
Aw, shucks. I'm blushing.
So what's going on over there in Red Hook?
Oh, it's the middle of winter, so nothing.
Red Hook, you know, which is sort of like the end of the world.
Well, I've been there for 12 years, and I find myself saying all the time, it's the coldest, loneliest place in all the land, you know, in the wintertime. And what do? I open up a fucking restaurant in the middle of the beginning of the worst winter ever, which was last year.
It's sort of like the city island of Brooklyn.
Well, I also kind of liken it to, I like to think more of that it's like the Montauk of the metro area.
I love Red Hook, and the crazy thing was, for most of my life in New York, Red Hook was just this remote place, and to get to it and to go to a show there,
that's why we went there.
Like, I know. Well, and you're
get
all,
away from
and
everybody.
You all love your remoteness such as it is, but there's a subway and a bus, mm-hmm. or you had to walk across the overpass and then walk, yeah. But now I live in Crown Gardens, and I just sort of walk there, and I'm sort of on Columbia Street, and I walk down, and I sort of find myself more and more being drawn to Van Brunt Street.
Do you take the crack bridge, or do you?
Well, both. It depends. Depends on whether I'm on my bike or walking.
What time of the day?
the crack bridge.
We have two.
And wasn't Red Hook the setting for Last Exit to Brooklyn, the classic Hubert Selby Jr. book?
Yeah,
I believe so. Which was drag queens and stabbings and.
And it was also known as the worst place on earth, according to a Time or Life in like 1991.
The worst place on earth.
The worst place in America.
Are you worried that Red Hook's going to become like the next hipster mecca? Is it already happening?
I'm sure it's inevitable. I mean, it's on the waterfront. It's beautiful. It's got this this charm. I mean, the stuff that's in place right now, all the developments that are on the rise. It's going to bring in a whole different caliber of people. But you know what? As a business owner, I say, Bring it,
right? I mean, New York's always been about change. We talk about this so much.
I've suffered for 7 years trying to make this thing happen. Well, I'll take it. I'll take your money.
Change is not just prima facie bad, which I think a lot of nostalgic New Yorkers think. I mean, nostalgia is death. Nostalgia is like a national pathology. People are always seem to be facing backwards. I mean, New York's always changed, and it's always going to change. I mean, the problem with a lot of people who have money or changing is they have like shitty taste, or no taste.
Exactly.
Which is the worst.
Yeah, usually no.
And yet we're still here. And we're still here. Bob, what's going on with you? You've been shaking it up with Lydia Lunch lately.
Yeah, we had a great show a couple of weeks ago. In between the two radio shows, I played a gig at Rough Trade with Lydia Lunch Retrovirus, and it was a smashing success. And we have an album coming out in May. I'm going to Paris at the end of March, and then we're going to be doing a long tour of Europe in June.
It's, and I think it's great that that's sustainable. I mean, you guys are both artists, and you're doing it. I mean, Lydia is willfully confrontational and not exactly a commercial entity per se, and still out there shaking it up. And
she's the hardest working woman in showbiz. She lives out of a suitcase and
Mickey Finn said to me after when we opened up for Lydia that time, he said he wanted to go over and say hello, but he was afraid she would make fun of his penis.
she probably would. Yeah, you know, she doesn't really mince words. Or
speaking of making fun of penises,
yeah.
That for a segue?
I told you what she said the other night when she went on after Handsome Dick.
This is at the Jane County.
This is at the Jane County tribute night at Bowery Electric, which was a lot of fun. And there was a bunch of people doing like three songs. So Handsome Dick came on and he did Surf and Bird and Search and Destroy and
with his band, the current Dictators lineup.
Yeah, no, it was a house band for everybody. And what was the last song he did? The classic first song, Sonic Reducer.
And of course, Handsome Dick and Jane legendarily were like a huge feud for years.
Oh yeah, yeah. I was surprised he was even doing it. In fact, I didn't even get into the Dictators until the '90s because I always, you know, had this, you know, thought he was this like homophobe nut that you know, attacked Jane County. Because I actually, not that I'm old or anything, but I actually went to the free Wayne County benefit back in 1976 or whenever the hell it was. And so he came out and
you were just a pup of 35 back then.
So Handsome Dick comes out and he goes, yeah, he goes, me and Wayne County never got along, but me and Jane County get along really well. And then Lydia came out and she said, it's a good thing Handsome Dick Manitoba went on before me, so now he could suck my dick.
Okay. That kind of killed my making fun of penises segue. nonetheless, this is the show that goes. There are no boundaries here on Arts and Seizures. In a former life before a restaurateur and a proprietor of Grindhouse.
It was last century, as a matter of fact.
Last century.
The last decade of the last century.
The last decade of the last century.
The 90s.
You know, you were more likely to be seen with whip in hand, not the spatula.
Whip in, and also, yeah, credit card to pay for all the bands that I was working with. That, you know, needed to have, you know, drinks and drugs and all sorts of things.
Okay, let's go through your sheet.
And we won't name any names, but
hey, we drop names on the show.
Yeah, but this is
very many this young is, this is stars.
Private information, but one of Aaron's clients from back in the day is now nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah, and it might actually be a female.
Yeah. And it might be.
And I'm not even going to say what category or whether or not they're hosting Saturday Night Live or not.
Very, 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 very big star. I mean, have you guys been thinking about Joe Franklin at all? We'll get to the making fun of penises. We'll get there. I promise everybody. Yeah. But I was very saddened by the Joe Franklin news. I was fortunate. I was actually on the Joe Franklin show once, which took a lot of finagling and going up to his office and kind of you know, kind of being a bit of a sycophant to get Sharky's Machine, my band, down to Sea Caucus to get on the show.
Were you on the show?
I was on the show, and my end was like, I knew a guy, it was when I was working for the wrestling magazines, who was a big wrestling fan and actually was writing for wrestling magazines, and was Joe Franklin's doorman. I mean, this is how it works, right? He's like, yeah, I know Joe. He's, you know, I'm his doorman, and he's a nice guy, and I can introduce you. Can I write for your magazine? And, you know, and that's how we made the deal.
Wow.
You know, a real backroom deal to get to Secaucus to be one of the 300,000 guests that he claims to have out on his show in, you know, over 43 years.
Sharky's Machine played on the Joe Franklin show?
Yeah, it was pretty dismal, I got to admit.
It's on YouTube or not?
It's not on YouTube. And, you know, it's shocking, you know, I mean, there was some good Joe Franklin on YouTube, and we're going to listen to the Spinal Tap interview when we take a break in a little bit, the Ramones interview, which is classic. But what's not on is Uncle Floyd in his Joe Frankfurter imitation of Joe Franklin. There's like, I guess the Uncle Floyd people kind of protect everything.
Yeah,
and
they do. You know, every time the Pussy Galore appearance on Uncle Floyd gets put on YouTube, his lawyers yank it off like within a week.
And if there's one thing I'm envious of your career and our buddy John Spencer, it's the appearance on the Uncle Floyd show.
Oh, that's like the highlight of my career. I should have given up this next day.
I know. I mean, I picked my.
I was hanging with Oogie.
Were you an Uncle Floyd fan, Aaron?
That was more of a Jersey thing.
Yeah, it's a Jersey thing that's sort of like filtered into like the
Like this thing called UHF before cable.
Channel 68.
Sure, yeah.
Channel 68.
Flip the dial or but, press that
move the
button.
Rabbit ears around.
But you're in good company. So Uncle Floyd, for those who don't know, is this crazy show, this subversive kiddie show that was put on by a bunch of stoners and dipsomaniacs built around Uncle Floyd, Floyd Vivino, who was this, you know, major league piano player with a repertoire of like thousands and thousands of these old-time songs. And then the bands would be like the Dead Boys and the Misfits and all these, like,
everybody.
A lot of punk rock. Everybody was on there, well, except for me.
Yeah, yes.
But I was on the Joe Franklin show, a very young man who has a bright, 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 bright future. Man, I love Joe Franklin. So let's get back to the making fun of penises. What what is it about your former career as a dominatrix that prepared you to be the success that you are today in Red Hook, Brooklyn?
I was not the type to make fun of penises. I don't, you know, that was not my MO. Humiliation was not my bag. I'm much more tactical. You know, it's like, how do I string this 250-pound guy from the ceiling without, you know, causing any kind of, you know, bodily harm, grievous injury, or, you know, taking
or building collapsing,
or taking the ceiling down, exactly. So, you know, it was much more. I mean, a lot of these people are still my friends to this day, and I just had a very different way of playing. I was not that bitch goddess kind of, you know, persona. I never really considered myself a dominatrix, more of a professional sadist. and how funny the roles have
changed. And now you're a professional masochist in the restaurant business.
Yes, karmic.
So tell us a little about the trials and tribulations. I was just reading about you on Eater.com. It's a fantastic story. And for those who don't know, really should know, like, you know, what you've gone through, literally hell and high water. To get where you are.
It was a, you know, an idea that was that started out in a neighbor's backyard. My friend Jens and Professor Brian, we made sausages one day, and a bunch of people came over. I literally woke up the next day with this idea to do this. I wanted to have a boisterous sausage parlor, and you know, say what you want. You know, I mean, yes,
I've heard all the jokes. Sausage parlor.
I've heard them all, and. Yeah. It was just like, oh, that's, you know, I'm at this point in my life where, you know, I've worn so many hats. I'm not exactly sure where I want to go from here, but I've always worked in the restaurant business in some capacity since I was like 13, or so it just seemed like a natural thing to do. Oh, I should build a restaurant, and let me do it in Red Hook, and, you know, because I really love it here, and I'd already been there for probably like 5 years or so, and I've, you know, found a space which is a couple doors down from where I was living. It was a total shithole. My friend Jens, as a matter of fact, who, you know, inspired me to kind of do this with the sausage party that we had in his backyard. again,
the boisterous sausage party. it's like Handsome Dick's Bar on a Saturday night.
Why wasn't I invited?
You know, we basically, you know, took this dump and made it, you know, into a destination. But that took about 6 years. I mean, I signed the lease April Fool's Day 2008, first mistake. Didn't get to start building until December of that year. And then it's like, you know, financial woes, momentum, seasonal stuff.
She literally built it from scratch.
What was that building beforehand? I mean, Grindhouse was a beautiful space. I mean, it was a wonderful
It hadn't even been looked at since, pretty much since the landlord had taken over. And I got to say, I have won landlord lotto. My landlord, Joe Menino, is probably one of the most patient, wonderful people. Like, I could not have done this project if it was somebody else. You know, his motto is slow and steady wins the race. And it was a building, he knows how much I put into it. And actually, the first day, like one of the first weeks that I was working on it, I'm up there on the scaffold in a Carhartt suit, playing with all this like toxic, like epoxy mortar, you know, basically like keeping the building, you know, together. And I could smell a cigar, and he walks in, and he's like, "Hey, is Aaron here?" And I'm up, you know, up there, and I take off my respirator. I'm like, "Hey, Joe, I'm up here. What are you doing here?" I'm like, "Well, Joe, I'm working on the building. I'm working on my space." "But you're a woman." He's old school, you know, Brooklyn Italian, obviously. And I was like, "Yeah, but Joe, I said I was going to work on this space, so I'm here, up here working." He's like, "But women are only on a job site to harass me for money." And so from then on, there's this heightened sense of respect, I believe, that he saw that I'm not just sitting there or sitting back and, you know, having, and that I also didn't have this giant, you know, cushion of finances to work with. I literally had to jump in there and do it myself. And sometimes, you know, in these lean months, I really, really miss those moments of, you know, of being a mason and, you know, and being a carpenter and, you know, doing all of this stuff, because it meant that I actually, you know, I still had money to work from, you know, versus now where it's just like, oh, are we going to make it next week? We're going to make it to next week.
Well, what we haven't gotten to is, and speaking of the high water, is that you got walloped.
After like 6 years or something of rebuilding, being a month away from opening.
And then the flood happens, and because I wasn't open, I was like cut out of all of these, you know, like financial aids and packages and services and all this stuff. And it was, you know, like, do I go on, you know? But and my mother even, my folks are, you know, really modest incomes. They sold the house that we grew up in order to, you know, help fund this project. And I'm so grateful. And my mom came up to me and said at my post Sandy, and it's like, you know what? If you have to walk away now, it's okay. I don't want to see you like kill yourself over this thing. And I was just like, no, I have to do this. I've got to finish it. And you know, be generous donors like Bob Burt over here and 180 other Kickstarters and just, you know.
But do you love your mother?
Of course. I love my mother and my father. As a matter of fact, etched into the concrete in the entrance of Grindhouses, okay, for Mom and Dad. So they're very important.
I'm going to start crying any second now. We're going to take a break. And once again, of course, we're mourning loss of Joe Franklin, who really was a superstar in this business. I mean, it's hard to imagine New York without Joe Franklin, to be honest with you. I was surprised on Facebook.
But the good thing is he did live a long life, and he died from natural causes and...
It was 80. 88.
Yeah, and like, you know, and he invented the talk show format. He was the first talk show. I honestly thought that was Steve Allen, another one of my heroes, but all praise to Joe. And I was fortunate enough to get to meet him a couple times, which was really incredible. Last time I saw Joe Franklin, I went to see Sid Caesar doing this sort of master class of comedy at NYU. It was this amazing thing. I sat next to Jane Curtin, and let me tell you, Jane looked good. but she felt she owed this great cosmic debt to Sid Caesar. She was really wonderful. And Joe Franklin was there, and he crashed the stage. Okay, since he was up there, and like, I mean, there's a room full of like famous comedians and TV writers, and you know, he's talking about, you know, writing the show of shows and how Mel Brooks and Woody Allen and Mike Nichols all got their start on his show. And Joe Franklin just walks up the stage and pushes him away and goes, "I want to thank Sid Caesar. I have to go do my show. I have to go now to memory lane. But Sid, you're big. You're going to be big in this business, kid. I'm telling you." And he left. And it was just like the most bizarre thing in the world. I mean, literally just crashed the stage and then disappeared.
Yeah. It's like Russell Simmons at the Karen O show.
So we're going to take a break, and we're going to listen to now, we're going down memory lane, as Joe would say. We're going to listen to Spinal Tap on the Joe Franklin show. And they're on the couch with a couple of never was's and possibly a has-been or wannabes. And, of course, Spinal Tap celebrating, I believe it's their 17th record on the Joe Franklin show.
I've been told this is the 17th album by the Spinal Tap.
That's right. Yeah.
Who's got? First of all, I want to thank Mr. Christophe Pierre for dropping in and inviting our friends to bring back highlight recollections of an evening at the Cotton Club in Midtown Manhattan, Silver Lining. I want to thank Mr. Bruce Logan for the honor. I want to tell you that the man who wrote the article, Richard Schwartz, should drop down here one day.
Yes.
Because he's bright.
He's interviewed a lot of people, not as many as you, Joe. But he would be very interested.
What is your final thought for the gentleman known as Spinal Tap?
Oh, I just was curious. Did you three know each other as children, like the Beatles?
We grew up together in London.
I just gathered that. I just felt it. That's wonderful.
Did you begin gigging? Did you begin gigging, as they say, in local pubs?
Yeah, mostly outside of tube stations. Subway stops.
Some small clubs as well, yeah.
All right.
Skiffle groups, we call them. It was like jug bands.
And stuff like that.
Yeah.
Mr. Pierre, what do you want to ask or say of a Red Hot group?
A question I was just thinking about as I heard the tape. I was wondering, just in comparison to the sound that I heard and the sound that you're doing now, how would you say you've changed over completely? Are you still going to go back to the old sound of just...
We've got a lot heavier. Question. You know, we've got a lot heavier. There's more power in the music today.
Everything's louder today, really, mostly.
And it's a matter of audience demand, really.
I was wondering, because there is a market for the sound that you had before.
I hope so. We'll bring it back.
Great.
Yeah, because we release it.
Never go
it
stale. Very well for you.
Oh, great. Thank you very much.
Well, we know you like nostalgia, so that's why we brought you.
Did you say nostalgia or neuralgia? Nostalgia. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been, for me, an hour of hours. We'll always be in touch and admiring these fantastic entertainers. Have a good day and a good night, and do stay well. And don't get any spinal taps. They hurt.
Oh, yes.
No spinal taps.
Only our kind.
So, Bob, I want to know, did you start gigging in pubs, gigging, as they say? I love Joe Franklin. I got to start using the technique of having my guests ask questions. Aaron, is there a question you'd like to ask this young, budding superstar, Bob Burt? Because that's what's going on there. If you don't know, it's like, you know, you've got this guy who's like, you know, this like minor league magician. He makes his living at kids' birthday parties. And here's Spinal Tap, who's Joe's buying into the whole hog as the biggest band in England. And he's having them ask each other questions. It's absolutely fantastic.
She could ask me, what was my favorite meal at Grindhouse?
What was your favorite meal at Grindhouse, Bob?
Well, it was a big thrill for me to eat at Grindhouse with Kevin Shields from My Bloody Valentine and B.P. Fallon, who has such a history. And what I credit him most for was organizing the musicians for Johnny Thunder's So Alone record.
Who are all dead right now, so.
Yes. B.P.'s not. He's still alive, and he's still taking psychedelics every night.
Best eyebrows.
Best great eyebrows.
All right.
Well, yeah, but one of my favorite dinners was when he brought Mick Collins in the other night. And you know, here I'm a huge fan of Mick myself. And to see him Shazamming the playlist that I had going on, it meant so much to me. And he also, I'm going to hold him to it. He said that he would make me a 4-hour playlist for the restaurant.
We are superstars. We are tastemakers. I'll tell you what. For real, though, let's take a little break. And I want to play some of the new this is new Liddy Lunch, right?
Newly recorded?
Fresh meat.
This is an EP that's available for sale online. And it's 4 songs that were actually included on the live one that we already had out. So we have a new album coming out in May, and this song is 3x3, which was originally performed in 1981, I believe, or 80, by the band 1313, which was Lydia being backed up by the LA punk band The Weirdos. And this song she wrote after having sex with John Doe in a parking lot, and then Xene got upset, so she had sex with Lydia also, and according to Lydia, Xene was better.
This is like
she wrote this song.
This is like a little Fleetwood Mac going no wave there for y'all. Well, we go there in Arts and Seizure. Let's give it a twirl. You're listening to Arts and Seizure with Bob Burt and Aaron Norris on the Heritage Radio Network. Here we go. Lydia Lunch and Retrovirus.
Super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Hi, I'm Reggie Watts, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
All right, and please remember that Heritage Radio and the Arts and Seizure Show are member-supported, so if you're digging what you hear and you're looking on your internet machine and you see a button that says be a member or donate, please don't hesitate. We'll send you a groovy tote bag, and maybe Bob will come over to your house and play the bongos.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, you know, I'm listening to that. That record sounds so good, and the live stuff sounds so good. Lydia's band is so sharp. I guess I got the No New York record. When did that come out? Like 1980, 1979?
1978 or 79. That's how I
got it in 1980, I guess.
Yeah.
And that was 35 years ago, and it still sounds like really sharp.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that record changed my life because I was actually silkscreen printing in Soho, and this girl that I worked with showed it to me. And that was at a time, because I was, you know, I've been around. I went to all the early CBGB shows. And then there was that period around 78 where there was just all of a sudden 9 million bands and all the cool bands were on major labels and blah, 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 blah. So, and, you know, I kind of like wasn't going out as much at the time. And then I got turned on to this record and I just fell in love with everything on it. And you know, I wasn't even thinking about being a musician at that point in my life, and it wasn't until No Wave came along that showed me that, you know, artistic approach or concept means a lot more than technical ability. You know, I'll take, you know, Ardo Lindsay's guitar playing over Eric Clapton's any day of the week.
I'll take Muddy Waters. And I'll take Muddy Waters over them all. And he knows approximately 32,000 less notes. All that coming from Bob Bird, who has played with the Rolling Stones and the Beatles. And yes. When I say the Rolling Stones and the Beatles, I mean Pussy Galore and Sonic Youth.
Yes, exactly.
Of course. Sundays are big days at Grindhouse, right?
We do. We have a cheap date night. So you can get a steak for two and a bottle of wine.
A steak for two, the Côte de Bœuf, Pour Deux?
It is gorgeous. My new chef, Carol Wagner-Greenwood, she's a legendary chef of Washington, D.C., and she kind of left the D.C. area. She needed to
She left the power corridor of Washington, D.C. to come to the up-and-coming
She got a little tired of having to refuse service to war criminals in her restaurants.
I love that
it's
story.
It's a true story.
She basically pissed on Donald Rumsfeld. Right?
She also refused. She was in Johannesburg working on a few places down there over the past few years, and she also very notoriously refused service to one of the sons of the de Klerk family. It's like, you know, she has no time for racists and war criminals, and you know, if you just be a decent person.
And here on the Arts and Seizure, I want to say we are against racism.
Yes.
We're going to take a stand and say we're against racism.
Yeah.
That's it. Those liberals in the booth are like, yes, yes, Mike, go there.
And here we are at Roberta's, where President Clinton
and his whole family.
Yeah,
exactly. We're here. Do you have an awkward date table at Grindhouse?
No, I only have 20 seats at Grindhouse, and
they're all awkward. Is what you're trying to say?
No, what happens is that, you know, everybody looks really good in the room. You know, there's a lot of like sort of, you know, muted pink and red tones, so everybody looks really pretty. One of my favorite compliments, and I want to get this printed on condoms. It was Valentine's Day last year. Somebody in the neighborhood came in, and he was on a blind date. And you know, I set him up in a nice table. They had a great meal, and he came back the next day and poked his head, and he was like, "Dude, Grindhouse gets you laid."
Did you hear that, Radioland?
I thought that was really, really wonderful. Yeah. Like, I need to do something with that.
It works for me. Oh,
I need to do that.
It is a very dainty place. It's very groovy
really pretty. I want it to be, you know, very.
It's the best atmosphere in a restaurant. I love the place.
Living room.
And, you know, the stamina that she has, like, just getting it all together. And there's so many times she was ready to pack it up and jump off a bridge and still go.
At least once a week.
You know,
one of the crack bridges.
And besides the fact that everyone should go there and eat and check it out because it's so amazing and the food is so great. But
and my staff is lovely. My staff is lovely. It's either my self waiting tables or the lovely Sarah Jane,
Sarah Jane's great, and we were there, and she recommended a great bottle of wine. We had a terrific dinner when we were there.
Yeah.
And you know, it is very datey and good. I laugh, of course, because we're sitting right next to the awkward date table.
I'm pretty sure this is like their like 3,000th date.
Right, I say this is the only time where we've had a date.
They've come full circle. They're just so bored with one another.
Of people that are actually older than us.
And they're just on their they're both on their phones. And I was trying to like see like who are they, like are they on Tinder? Are they trying to like Tinder this shit? You know, is there something called Senior?
I think at some point for when you get that old brunt, when I go out on a date with my girlfriend or date with my girlfriend, I should say, there's the allotted cell phone break time when we sort of say, okay, because really we turn our cell phones off after dinner.
You don't have
but
to
every once in a while, it's like, okay, we're allowed to check in with the world. We're not making a big statement about it. But these guys are on their phone the whole fucking time.
But you know what? And it looks like they have been together for a long time, and I think it's really cute. And my parents have been together for, right, it'll be 47.
And your parents?
7 years.
But hopefully, they still have something to say to each other.
They do. My mom usually rolls her eyes at what my dad has to say because he's repeating something for the umpteenth time. But they love each other very much, and I'm really proud to have them as
well. They should be. Eric Norris, a very, very, very superstar, upcoming superstar in the Red Hook restaurant business, in the world, in the international culinary world,
and. If you're looking to invest money, that's the place to do it.
Yes, yeah. I am looking for an investor. That'd be awesome.
All right, well, because no risk business of the restaurant world, but you're kicking ass, and we're really glad to have you. And
Thank you.
Did you bring us cookies?
I did. I brought you some of these. Probably the best chocolate chip cookie I've ever had. Carol made these. They are... chocolate chip with a little bit of salt on top, and they're just the best texture.
There were three cookies with my creme brulee that I had the other night.
Send them over here. So these are the salt and sweet thing going on.
They're really good.
Sometimes things that are trendy are okay. You know, not everything that's a trend is bad, and I feel that a lot. You know, being in this like foodie world of Roberta's and Heritage Radio and the world at large, people hear the word artisanal and they just like sort of make a face or, oh God, another salt caramel. But salt caramel's great. Salt and sweet is good. And good cocktails are better than bad cocktails. You know, I mean, they're good trends.
Yeah, good is good.
Better is better is what we say here in Arts and Caesar.
Good is good. And those cookies are great.
All right,
she doesn't know that I basically raped the raped the closet of what she made. She's going to have to do a little baking off today.
Also, here at Arts and Caesar, we're against rape. I want to go out on the limb right here. Okay, no racism and no rape. Okay,
well, except of the cookie box.
We're also against poverty.
I am very much against poverty, but it's all I know.
But we're all about Bob Burt.
We forgot to tell you that Bill Cosby baked those cookies.
Any minute now, Edison, I'm going to have my way with you.
Thankfully, it's the fastest half hour on the internet today.
I hope your girlfriend's not listening.
And as I'm sinking down the Cosby K-hole, I'm going to say goodbye to you all. Thanks, Bob Burt, for coming up.
It's my pleasure.
One.
Love this place.
Look for Bob and Lady Lunch. Please go to Grindhouse.
Thank you.
Our friend Aaron.
And the Wolf Manhattan Project coming soon.
Go tonight to Grindhouse and have dinner for two. It's cheap date night.
Cheap date night
at Grindhouse.
And both myself and Sarah Jane.
And Grindhouse gets you laid. So,
hey!
For everybody on Arts and Seizures, thanks to Liz in the booth and y'all. This is Mike Edison. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.